Good evening. Good to see everyone out tonight again. If you want to go ahead and be opening your Bibles back to Psalm 23, that'll be our text again tonight as we pick up the second half of this psalm. Psalm 23. Well, what's that doing up there? No, that is not my pet cow. But if you would notice the tag, I thought this was just ironic. The tag is 23. Just ironic that we're talking about Psalm 23. But growing up, I was not a farm boy, but I got to spend some time on a farm because my grandpa always seemed to have one. May change locations from year to year as they had a tendency to move quite a bit too. But I got to spend some time on the farm and be around cattle and things like that. But I also, my childhood friend, Roy, he lived with his grandparents, and they lived on a farm up in Smithville. And so I would go and hang out at Roy's house. And of course, as little boys would do, we would run around in the open pasture and see what kind of things we could get into. But for some reason, my little brother was tagging along with us that day. Mom and Dad must have had to do something, and so they dumped Jake off too. And so reluctantly, I let him tag along. And so Roy and Jake and I were deciding to go out into the field, and I think we were going to go out into the woods and see what kind of fun we could have out there. And not long into our trek, or early on into the just open field, we came upon a ditch. And in that ditch, we just from a distance, we saw this little white thing sticking up out of the ditch. And Roy's family, they had chickens that they raised on the farm in addition to cows. And Roy just thought maybe a chicken had got loose since it was just that white little speck. Well, as we got closer, we found out it was not a chicken, it was a calf. And to further confirm that it was a calf, Mama Cow was coming. And I mean, she was charging at us with full steam ahead. My little brother, who's 4 years younger than I am, which is more significant at that time of our life than now, was the first one up the hill to the house. Then there was Roy, and then there was me. And the reason I was so slow, aside from my non-athletic abilities, was that I was having to borrow some mud boots that were about three sizes too big. And so, clopping along, one fell off while I was running, and I was dumb enough to run back and go put it on with the cow coming after us. And so, I was in that valley of shadow of death, or so I thought in that moment, thinking, this is it. This is the way I'm going to go out. I'm going to get trampled by an angry cow. And thankfully, there was a truck parked out in the middle of the field for some reason, had a bunch of metal pipes laying in the bed of the truck. I jumped into the bed of the truck and hung on to those pipes for dear life for probably at least half an hour while Roy's grandma was calling out, Jared, get back up here. And I was not going to move because that cow was staring me in the eyes the whole time. Finally, I got the courage to get out of there and go out, probably because the cow forgot why she was mad. But that was my moment of great fear as a child. I thought I was going to be trampled by that cow. And while that's a funny story to recount, we know that there are times where it really does seem like we're in a no-win situation. We're going to get trampled by the circumstances that we find ourselves in, that we are in that valley of shadow of death that David talks about there in Psalm 23 and verse 4. And so as we pick up the second half of this study tonight, we are thinking about how we can be following the shepherd, finding this peace with the shepherd. And just as a review, let's think about the author again. That David is writing this from a position of great experience as a former shepherd. That just packs more of a punch, I think, into the fact that he's talking about God in this way because he has so much experience with that. And then we ask the question, what comparisons can we draw from in our comparison to God, looking at him from that perspective? And then finally, what challenges did David have to maintain or strive to maintain peace in his life? And we know that he went through a great deal of struggle and turmoil in his own life and that peace was not always an easy thing to come by. And again, to refresh our minds of the psalm, I invite you to turn, if you haven't already, to Psalm 23. And let's just go ahead and read it through one more time as we pick back up in our study so we get the whole context of David's message. Psalm 23, verse 1. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in paths of righteousness for His name's sake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for You are with me. Your rod and Your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me. In the presence of my enemies, You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. So as we considered the first three verses this morning, just thinking about from part one, we talked about how the shepherd fulfills our needs, that He gives us everything that we need, that we have no want. And if there is something that we want, but it takes us away from the care of the shepherd, away from the fold, it's not worth pursuing, right? Then we talked about how the shepherd guides us to good, the green pastures, the still waters, that God is not going to lead us into turmoil. He doesn't want to see us suffer, although sometimes it is for our good, and He allows us to go through those things, but He does not inflict those things on us. And that in the end of it all, that He is ultimately leading us to green pastures and still waters, in the fact that He has prepared a place for us in that condition. And then finally, this morning, we talked about how the shepherd is willing to restore us. And that will really fit into more of what we talked, that we will talk about tonight as we get into verse 4, talking about that valley of the shadow of death. That sometimes we need restoration for various reasons, but what we can see from verse 4 is that the shepherd is constant. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. The "even though" I think is important to pick up on there. That regardless of what the circumstance is, it doesn't matter who the enemy is, how powerful, how formidable they are, doesn't matter what the situation is, God is constant. The shepherd is constant, and we can always depend on Him. We can always lean upon Him. We can always trust Him, even when it seems like it's going to be the darkest time in our life. And so we see that, I think, as we go through here, that there are different valleys, though. Some of them are challenges from others. As David talks specifically here in the presence of his enemies, presence of his enemies in verse 5, but the valley of death and the fearing of evil, that sometimes we do face challenges from others. In 2 Timothy chapter 3, in verses 1 through 5, Paul talks to Timothy specifically about the ministry that Timothy's in the midst of and the things that he will face. And he specifically says in that text in 2 Timothy 3 that difficult times are coming. He talks about the kind of people that he will have to interact with or deal with or watch out for. And they are some of the same people that we have to deal with and interact with today and are challenged with today. That we are in the midst of those difficult times because sin is rampant. And the fact that sin from other people can influence us to sin, could influence our children to stray away from the Lord. Whatever the case is, that we understand that the enemy is out there, that there is evil out there. And that's all the more reason why we need to remember that the shepherd is constant. That while people are not constant, while people are not always trustworthy, that God is. That while we may do all we can to live a righteous life, the effects of this sinful world may present challenges that we'd like to avoid, but we can conclude, as the psalmist did in Psalm 118, verse 6, regardless of what the challenge is from other people, that the Lord is on my side, I will not fear, what can man do to me? That's a banner statement, if you will, that we can live by and trust in, but we have to remember it each and every day to understand that the Lord is on my side. And so no matter how evil the world is, man can't do anything to me from the standpoint of take my soul. That's the only thing left for God to be able to do. But in other circumstances, we understand that the valley where we are can only conclude that life happens as well. That sometimes bad things happen to good people just as they do to bad people. And sometimes good things happen to good people as they do to bad people. In Job chapter 2, verses 9 and 10, as Job is really getting into the thick of things here, of all the ailments and the torture that he's having to go through, and the emotional torment of losing his children, that it leaves his wife to saying what? Do you still hold fast to your integrity? Curse God and die. And really, that may be where we're left at some points in our lives. That maybe we feel like the valley is so deep and so dark, there's nothing left to do than just hang it up as a Christian. We feel like, I can't take it anymore. Where is God? Where is God when I hurt? We had a class on that back at Douglas Hills that maybe we can go through sometime here. Because that is a question that all of us probably ask at some point in our lives as Christians. And just people in general, that is a hesitation for some people to come to the Lord. Because they feel like, if I'm having to go through so much pain and torment, how can there be a God? How can God let these things happen to me or to other people in the world? And what was Job's response in that text? Shall I receive good and not evil, or bad things that the Lord gives and the Lord takes away? Blessed be the name of the Lord. That Job was not going to give up on God just because things got hard. And for Job, they got extremely hard. And if we were in that situation, would we be Job's wife or would we be Job? That's a question that we're left to have to consider for ourselves. That oftentimes we struggle to reconcile why we or others are having to struggle more than it seems others do. Sometimes it seems like the rich get richer and they don't have to do anything to get those things, or that things come so easy to them. And especially those who clearly have no relationship with God, and we're left to think, well, that is not fair. It's not fair that they have so much and they don't do anything remotely close to living a life like a Christian. Why do they have so much and I have so little? Or why don't they get struck with this kind of illness or that? Why am I having to deal with it when they have everything and I seem to have nothing? And I feel like the conclusions I've drawn from this sentiment, I feel like I've shared them before, maybe not, but we'll do it again. Two answers I think that help me at least to reconcile why bad things can happen or why good things can happen regardless of the person that we're talking about. Matthew chapter 5 verse 45, in the second part of that verse, Jesus says, "For He makes His sun rise on the evil and on the good, and sends rain on the just and on the unjust." What do I conclude from that? Just what it says there, life happens. God lets life happen. And then the other thing, and I think this is the more potent point of the two, is that Jesus was the most undeserving of what He received. And yet it wasn't just life happening to Him. In fact, it was predetermined that He would endure all the ill treatment, suffering, and death for you and me. And so really, in reality, the only person who has ever lived who deserves to say, "That's not fair, why am I having to go through it?" is Jesus Himself. Because He didn't do anything to deserve the treatment that He got. And yet He's the one person who never said, "That's not fair." You think about that. And maybe it'll change our perspective in the way that we look at our life. Maybe it'll stop us in our tracks before we start complaining, start griping and sounding like Israelites or whatever else, and think with perspective. One person who never said, "That's not fair," was our Savior. And maybe, perhaps, we can be more Christ-like in that way as well. But then, of course, there's the valley we all know of, where we're found holding the shovel because we've dug this valley for ourselves. And those are the self-inflicted ones, when we choose to stray from the shepherd. You know, we can quote Paul's well-known words of Romans 3:23, that all have sinned and fallen short, and we can react two different ways to that. We can react with comfort or tranquility that, well, at least I'm not the only one who has sinned. That there's strength, or really weakness, in numbers. To think that I'm not the only one, that's really sad, because all of us have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. That maybe there is some comfort there, but in the grand scope of things, it's really something I should not take comfort in, because all of us have turned our backs against God before. And the other way that we need to take it is that that we have all turned our backs on God and that we are in desperate need of Him. And we need to let that force us to wake up and realize that because I have fallen short of His glory, I need to do everything I can to live for His glory now that I am a Christian. Or if I'm not a Christian, that I need to let that push me to become one. Because when we realize that we're in that valley of darkness because of what we have done, that we have been the one to put ourselves in that place, then we've got no one to blame but ourselves. That was certainly the case when we think about David and his sin with Bathsheba. Now, it was not a sin for him to see that woman bathing. It was a sin for him to continue looking and to allow his mind to wander and allow his mind to covet and desire and lust and go through with the motions of having her and being with her and getting her pregnant and then having essentially her husband murdered so he could cover up the sin. He had dug that valley for himself and there was no doubt about it. But then at the same time, he was also so blind to it that he had to have Nathan come and tell him a story about a man taking, of all animals, a sheep, and telling him that this man took a sheep that was not his, killed it and offered it, and everything else. And David was like, that man needs to get taken in and he needs to be killed for what he has done. And then what did Nathan say? It wasn't a compliment when he said, you are the man. It was an accusation. It was a conviction saying, you are that man, David. You took something that did not belong to you and you had someone else die. You are the man, David. And so David still, once he realized his fault, he says to Nathan in 2 Samuel chapter 12, verse 13, had the wherewithal, the humility to be able to be brought back down and said, I have sinned against the Lord. And that has to be our response when something is either brought to our attention, whether we have a Nathan in our life, which I hope we do, who can tell us like it is and tell us what we need to hear, not what we want to hear, but what we need to hear, and say, you are that person. You're not in a right relationship with the Lord. You're not being faithful to Him. You've sinned. Our response needs to be the same as David and say, I have sinned against the Lord. And we need to make it right. But we have to make those realizations as well, whether or not we have those friends, and make sure that we are not blinded to our sins. But whatever the valley is that we find ourselves in, we have to understand that while we're consistently inconsistent, the Lord is unwavering. Our day and our demeanor can change as often as the wind blows if we're not careful, but we know that the Lord is always there and always ready for us to call on His name. And if we remember from as far back as this morning, as we closed our lesson in John 10, where Jesus told His listeners that He is the Good Shepherd, and if He's the Good Shepherd, we can also see how unwavering and how steadfast He is when we look at another statement that He made in John chapter 8 and verse 58. He said, Jesus said to them, truly, truly, I say to you, before Abraham was, I am. In John chapter 1, in the beginning was the Word was with God, and the Word was God, that Jesus has always been and always will be. In Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 8, we read the writer saying that Jesus Christ is the same yesterday and today and forever. And so when we look at Jesus as the Good Shepherd, as the true Shepherd, there is no question left in our mind that He is consistent, that He is always going to be there, that He's not the one that goes anywhere. It is you who chooses to leave the presence of the Shepherd, to leave the flock. But the fact that He is consistent means that He is always there to return back to as long as we have breath in our lungs. And so David looks at the tools of the shepherd as well, a rod and a staff. And while they may be used in the defense of the sheep, there's also a source of comfort there for the sheep, isn't there? That there's comfort in the shepherd because of the defense. And we can know that the shepherd is at work in the defense of his sheep, but we have to be sure that we're standing behind him and not way out in front of him. Because He can't fight for us if we're away from the flock. And if you haven't noticed, it's here in verse 4 and on into verse 5 that David changes the pronoun, doesn't he? In verses 1 through 3, he's talking about He. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. And continues with that pronoun into verse 3. But then in verse 4 and in verse 5, he gets into the you and the your. And in some sense, I believe we can consider this as a prayer from David as he directs his thoughts not only about God, but to God as well. And certainly another aspect about the shepherd that we can find peace in is that not only is he constant, but he is a shepherd who gives. And this really goes along with everything that we've talked about this morning and tonight. But that you prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. That the shepherd is also in this text serving as a host. That in reality the shepherd has been giving this whole time, but it's in verses 5 and 6 that the shepherd seems to be described in a different role than just the regular shepherding job that David's been talking about. And so the shepherd provides regardless of the circumstances. We talked about how he is constant, he's consistent. It doesn't matter who the enemy is or what the evil is that may be around us. The shepherd is there and the shepherd is providing. You know, the truth is that we're the ones who are more distracted by the peripheral things going on around us. God's not bothered by those things. God knows that He can defeat anything and anyone. And so He's going to continue to do His part. We just have to, again, be reminded and always remember that we need to be behind the shepherd and not out in front. As we've already noted, he's not going to go anywhere and he's going to do his part. And so we can take comfort and find peace in that he is going to provide regardless of what the circumstances may be around us. And it's not just that he provides, as David notes, but that the shepherd provides abundantly. The shepherd is not stingy in what he provides. David says that his cup overflows with the abundance that God provides. You know, it's one thing to recognize that there's turmoil and strife in the world and that we've had our own battles in our life. We would be blind not to notice those things, to admit that we've had challenges and that we've had things to trouble us in our life. But we would also be equally blind, if not more so blind, if we didn't take the opportunity to recognize how blessed we are as well. It's really easy to lose sight of the fact of how blessed we are. It's really easy to just focus on the negative and focus on what all is going wrong in our life instead of considering how blessed we are. But David speaks of this oil in Psalm 23, and if you just take a casual look at the vast purposes of oil in that time, in Bible times, you can understand that it's a valuable commodity. And David is saying that his cup overflows. What do we get from that? That his cup overflows, well, it means that God's not holding back, and instead he's giving all the more, giving far beyond. And so God is providing what we need. The oil was used just for all kinds of different things in those times. And we know that James writes that God is the giver of every good and every perfect gift as we look at James 1 verse 17. But Paul makes it clear that God most certainly provides for those who strive to provide for others as well. That it's not all just self-reflecting on what we want or what we need. Paul speaks about the generosity he received as he was wrapping up his Philippian letter there in Philippians chapter 4. And in verse 19 he says, "And my God will supply every need of yours according to His riches and glory in Christ Jesus." And so all of us, of course, are willing to receive blessings from God, but we need to be sure that we're willing to be blessings to others as well. For David to recognize that his cup overflows, the natural progression, I think we talked about this some this morning as well, is to think about how I can be a blessing to others. How can I help other people's cups to overflow with blessings? How can I be a benefit to others as well? And then finally, as we near the conclusion of this great psalm, we can find peace with the shepherd in that the shepherd welcomes. As he concludes this text, "Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever." You know, I mean, what else could we conclude if we're following the shepherd? That goodness and mercy follow the one who is willing to follow the shepherd. that if He's leading us to green pastures, if He's leading us to still waters, these things are going to come with it. You know, some translations use the word instead of mercy, they use loving kindness, or you could say steadfast love. But the point still remains that the Lord is certainly providing, is He not? And that He's consistent in that providing, as we've already covered. And then additionally, instead of surely goodness, an alternate translation could be that only goodness is provided. And so still yet, there's confidence by David in what his shepherd can and will provide. And perhaps the reason, the greatest reason for peace that David or any one of us could have is that when we're following the shepherd, we have no question of where we belong. That where else could we desire to be than the house of the Lord? That if I'm following the shepherd, I want to go where He goes. I want to be where He's going to be. And so following Him so faithfully as His sheep, we want to be in that house of the Lord forever. And when we realize that, it means that we're in His presence. It means that we're continuing to realize whom we belong to. And once we do reach that eternal green pasture and still waters, there's going to be no question left in our mind of who we belong to, because we're there. We're in the presence of the Great Shepherd. And then it also means that we know where our home is, that we're there to stay. But I hope that tonight we know where our home is. It was just much like what Jesus said in John chapter 14 and verses 1 through 4. He said, "Let not your hearts be troubled. Believe in God, believe also in Me. In My Father's house are many rooms. If it were not so, would I have told you that I go to prepare a place for you? And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and will take you to Myself, that where I am, you may be also. And you know the way to where I am going." And today we know where Christ is, don't we? But is our home there? Can we call that place our home tonight? Can we say as we sing the song that we are just pilgrims here? That we have a place prepared for us in the presence of God. We know where Jesus is, that He's at the right hand of the Father. We know that He has a place prepared for each one of us who truly serves as His disciples, one of His faithful sheep. And so as we close, I think it would benefit us to review one of the slides we opened with this morning. And that's, we need to be reminded of what God's role is compared to ours. Who really is the leader in our life? Are we serving as the shepherd, or are we being the sheep who follow? And of course, who makes the choice to keep it that way? It is You. That we are all responsible for our own standing with the shepherd. That we all have to decide for ourselves that it is better to serve and to follow the shepherd than it is to try to stray away and be out on our own, away from the flock. And so the question left for us again tonight is, are we following the shepherd? And that question is left for you as together we stand and sing.